Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast.
Heart of Texas, the trailer park is not nice and dark. Deep in the heart of Texas, Dad drinks his brew and he spits his chew. Deep in the heart of Texas, the TV blares but no one cares. Deep in the heart of Texas, here we go.
Hey.
I was going to say hi. I was going to do Duke Nukem's voice. Hi, I'm Duke. It went away.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Wah. King of the Hill podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rusty.
And he's Duke Nukem.
I'm Duke Nukem.
Okay, so.
Is that all the balls you got?
I'm very much looking forward to this redo, you know, or continuation of the series or whatever.
I'm ready for it. Hopefully we get it sooner than later.
So,
but, you know, greatness takes time.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy, his name is Eric Eisenberg.
Shout out to Eric Eisenberg. We're going to use some of your writing here.
Yeah, he did an article, and I think it's Cinema Blend. I think it's where it came from.
Yeah, Cinema Blend.
He says, Mike Judge's King of the Hill functions well in syndication as a vast majority of the 259 episodes.
Yeah, there is 259 episodes that we have to discuss. We've discussed a lot. We still got a long way to go.
He says, the vast majority of them, standalone stories, don't make much of a dent in continuity, but that doesn't mean the series is wholly without arcs and character development. Audiences who watch the seasons in order see Luann Platter become more of an independent person, witness Joseph Gribble get hit by puberty, and get a conclusion in the conflict between Hank Hill and his hateful father, Cotton.
That is
my favorite wrap.
There's a lot of character development for sure. And like you said with Luann, we watch Luann from being this angsty teenager, you know, getting, you know, all these emotions stuff, getting removed from the home and having to live with Peggy and Hank. And then by the end of the season, she's having a kid. By the end of the series, she's got a kid and a husband and her own little spot. And, you know, she really matured. She's probably, honestly, one of my favorite character arcs in the whole show.
Oh, she is.
As far as, like, how she develops.
She's the one that grew the most, honestly.
Yeah, she seems to have grown the most as an individual. And
she had a long way to go, too.
So the first one that it has for is Hank Hill, and where we kind of leave off with Hank. Well, of course, he's like the center of the whole universe. The show is called King of the Hill, and he's the king of his hill.
Never got to see him have a promotion.
Never saw him have a promotion. So as already mentioned in chat on the last episode that we recorded for Monday, he's assistant manager for the entire run. He never gets any promotion to manager.
That's all he ever wanted.
Like that. Well, that's all he ever wanted, but I don't think his ambition was to go further either, but also – I mean, there's not really that much further to go in that company, but where he's at is the secondhand man of the whole show.
Yeah.
But he always catches so much shit because of Buck and from Buck. And that's, like I said, you know, assistants always get the first, like, shit rolls downhill. The assistant gets hit first.
To be honest with you, Hank is the least rounded out character as far as, like, if you look at the whole 13 seasons.
Yeah.
With the exception of him dealing with Cotton's death. That's pretty much it. Well, I guess, I mean, he found out he had a brother. He goes through some stuff with his mom.
He goes through a little bit of stuff
But, I
with
mean,
his mom.
As far as growth goes, it's not like he became manager. It's not like he, you know,
screw
propane.
He just went through
like
the show as
yeah.
Hank.
Yeah, yeah, he was pretty much the calm one. It says, with Hank's dad being dead, a lifelong poison has been removed from his life, though he still has an awkward relationship with his mother, Tilly. He's known to fly into a blind rage once in a while, despite having attended anger management therapy, and he regularly gets frustrated with his family, but they are always his first priority. I mean, that's what you can say about Hank. You know, he really didn't change a whole lot, so Hank's Hank.
Yeah, Hank's Hank. And that's like in anything, you have to have a constant somewhere.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So the fact that he remains constant, that's because he's a pillar of the show where – you have all the side characters like I don't even call them really side characters. They're primary characters of the show, but like you said, the development of Luann and stuff like that. I feel like that's why you have all these changing pieces, and Hank just remains constant. Because without the constant, you can't recognize the growth in every. If everybody was just stagnant in the show, then there wouldn't, you know, there would be no growth to observe whatsoever in the show, and no development. Everybody would just be stagnant. So to have those moving parts around Hank, I think, is what really made the show great.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. The second one is Peggy Hill. He calls her the unbearable know-it-all.
Yeah, which is, I think it's pretty much the consensus.
Her big changes as far as her character were basically all around her career.
Yeah.
Even though she broke every bone in her body. It says she has had many jobs throughout the series. Elementary school substitute teacher. She wants to be a full-time educator. She never gets that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she does.
No, she lied. Have we done that episode yet where she lied about being a nun and she teaches at the school or whatever? No. That one was pretty tough, yeah.
She becomes a writer for the newspaper.
That these days would get you on a list.
Oh, heck yeah. She becomes a writer for the newspaper with her musings. She works as a real estate agent.
Yeah, she does a lot of stuff. She's like she does the mid-level marketing stuff where she swindles Bill. She swindles Bill into doing that MLM stuff.
I forgot about that. Yeah. But as far as Peggy goes, she stays fairly constant. And, I mean, she does want to be a great wife and mother, or at least that's what she says. Then we get to Bobby. He regularly demonstrates himself as a weird kid. As the guy says here, that boy ain't right.
That boy ain't right.
But he
does
find
ways.
That's
a Friday episode of Blah.
That's right. Yeah. But he does find ways to connect with his dad. He's a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, or he works with him on the rose growing competition.
Yep.
And then in Sirloin to Love, the episode that was created to be the series finale, they find common ground over a deep appreciation for beef, with Bobby showcasing an innate expertise in meat grading.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, what I find hilarious about the dynamic between Bobby and Hank is that all of these things that Hank would love to be able to do, not everything because he's not very good at sports, but all the auxiliary stuff that Hank likes, like stuff to do with meat and shooting and, you know, stuff like that, Bobby always excels. Anytime it's like you said, he excelled at the butcher thing where you go in and they look at the meat on a cow and all that stuff, like in that episode. And then the episode where they go shooting, he was just like a shooter, like the DC sniper taking everything out. You know, he was accurate, you know what I mean? So imagine how crazy that was, just living in Virginia and there's like some dude just riding around in a car laying in the back of the trunk shooting people. But yeah, so Bobby, and then Bobby, when he does the comic and stuff like that, I feel like he takes the most chances.
That's the big one.
He takes the most chances.
I hope he's still doing like open mics and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, but he's somebody who gets the job done. Yeah,
Dale
you're right,
and Nancy Gribble, she maintained her ongoing affair with John Redcorn. Of course, then
she gives it up. She does give him up. Which I'm glad they did it early. That's one of the things that I really like about the whole dynamic of that is they didn't let it drag on because the show still goes on for another eight seasons after this. So
this is after season 4.
Yeah. So they don't. You know, they don't drag it out. They cut it off pretty quick because I'm sure by that point everybody was kind of like. The audience at the time when it was airing was probably like, oh, this is kind of you're coming off of the scandal with Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton around this time. So a lot of women are, you know, not really cool, you know, with the whole like cheating thing and how it was accepted in the national light like that. So I feel like with this Nancy thing, she was probably starting to be like a hated character and they wanted to try to redeem her, which I think she redeems herself. I think she redeems herself.
So I agree. I think she does kind of redeem herself.
In a way. I mean, it's hard to redeem yourself after lying to somebody about a biological child or them raising somebody else's child for that long and not ever telling them.
Yeah.
But she's redeemed herself as far as you can in that situation.
That's true. That's true. And their marriage does hold pretty strong, it says here, throughout the
Yeah, it does. It does. They seem to be, out of all of the marriages you see in the show, there seems to be the most functional.
My question, like he brings up here, is that Dale can't support himself and his paranoia-driven schemes via his failing exterminator business, and Nancy is the one who maintains a steady job yeah. as a news anchor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she's really...
She's the breadwinner, so yeah.
My question is, does he really know, and he can't like step outside of the fact that he'd have to take care of himself?
I think he's somebody who could probably be on a Social Security check very easy.
Yeah,
Chantel said that she likes how they teased at the temptations of the affair throughout the rest of the show.
Oh, yeah.
How they always kind of had the real tense moments. And it always seemed more like John Redcorn.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think
it was more expressed by him yeah. how he wished
he wanted
that,
it more than yeah. anything. Yeah.
And then that weird episode where he tries to be. Tries to it was the native it was
the
native
thing.
Episode where he tries to do all that
with Joseph
yeah.
And of course, you know, Johnny Hardwick
you're
passed.
A creep yeah you're a creep
Johnny Hardwick passed, and so yep. we're really gonna miss him, but he did do some work on it before he died. We'll just see how
that's
happens.
What I'm most curious of is how they who they find, because they did find somebody to replace Justin Roiland after he had his scandal, and I've listened to the new season voices for Rick and Morty, and you can't tell the difference, honestly. You cannot. Like, I feel like they will find somebody who will do an excellent job in redeeming the character after Johnny's passing, and as not being able to, I don't know if redeeming was the right word, as not being able to have Johnny Hardwick reprise his role. Rest in peace to Johnny for that.
Yeah, no kidding.
For his dedication to his craft. I feel like this was his magnum opus, was this TV show.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
This was like his
well, that and the videos he did
his
online.
Best body of work, I feel like, was this show. He's got a bunch of great stuff, but all of his stuff that he does that is great online,
yeah.
all based around the
Dale
Gribble
yeah,
character.
Sitting at a piano, all he was a
Daniel Day-Lewis of voice acting. He was true method, you know. He was really... there was blurred lines between, like, where everybody else, once they stepped out of their character, they were, you know, who they were, whereas the lines were blurred between Johnny Hardwick and Dale Gribble and all of the character itself. I mean, he was probably a Dale Gribble-esque human being without...
Yeah.
Without the extreme madness, I guess. I guess he probably had an element of it.
Well, I think that it's like they said, you know, the character was based on him, not the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, so he was always that guy. Okay, so then we go to, of course, Joseph. We all know that John Redcorn is his biological father.
Yeah.
We all know that Joseph is going to grow up to be this big, strong guy because, I mean, that's where his DNA comes from.
Yep.
However, as they mentioned here in the article, he's being raised by a psychopath that is Dale Gribble.
I don't know if he's a psychopath.
I don't know. We do know that Joseph's not a smart boy.
Joseph is not very intelligent,
stupid.
No. Hormonal.
Well, he lacks social skills. Yeah. He's regularly overwhelmed by just his it says
I think his body
here,
is
yeah.
overwhelmed
yeah.
with hormonal regulation.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
regulating his hormones very
What's
well.
What's crazy to me is that he never puts it together.
Yeah.
That John Redcorn could be his dad.
There's some kids, like, I remember going through, like, puberty in that age. There were some kids that were just, like, they just smooth. It was just, there was, like, no real... Like, yeah. they didn't really go through voice cracking. It was just
sure.
like one day they woke up, their voice was...
Yeah.
One day
deep
they woke up, they were
6 foot.
One mm-hmm. day, that, you know, like, it was... and then some kids, it just seemed like a painstaking process, you know?
All right, next.
And I think that's, like, the juxtaposition between Bobby and Joseph is Joseph and... Joseph is like this really deeply insecure person going through puberty and stuff
oh,
like that.
Yeah.
And Bobby is prepubescent, but he's still going through that. You know, he's at that point where he's going through some of it, but he just glides through it kind of. It doesn't really affect him or bother him because he just stays
yeah.
himself the whole way through.
He stays a 12-year-old pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
Next, we got Boomhauer.
Boomhauser.
And, you know, honestly, they mentioned that this is probably one of the most fascinating ones as far as the future goes. Because we don't know anything about Boomhauer other than he's a womanizer until season 13's To Sirloin with Love.
Yeah, and there's a badge.
Yeah, you know.
And that's the thing with the badge thing that kind of blows me away about him having a badge is all the criminal shit that everybody does. Well, I guess that's why nobody ever gets in trouble.
It's true.
Per se by the law, because he's on the right side of it.
This had to be just like a last minute thing where there's like, oh, yeah, and Boomhauer's a Texas Ranger. But we see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to hear the story on that.
We see inside his wallet. We understand that he's a Texas Ranger. They've never mentioned it before. And like this article says, it does introduce a few plot holes, like you were saying. But if Hank or any of his friends or family members run into an issue with the law, it will be Boomhauer's time to shine. Next, we've got Bill, Army Barber. He is probably the most pathetic one on the show, even though I would put Dale up against that.
Dale is, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Bill is. Bill's the most pathetic. Dale has somebody who actually loves and cares about him. I think Bill is pretty much on a lonely island.
Bill is still hung up on Lenore until we got to one of the last ones, which was Hank in the Great Glass Elevator that we did. And he's kind of able to put that aside.
But then again,
he never finds another relationship.
Yeah, and I always like those episodes, but I also hate him at the same time because no matter how close he gets, he always gets hung up on something. If it's not Lenore, it's something else, you know what I mean? Like when he got with Khan's mother-in-law, whatever it was, that episode.
Yeah.
And he always gets hung up on something. Like, he can't ever just be happy with, like, Ann Richards. Like, come on. Like, Bill, you was riding around in limos. You was having state dinners. Like, you were living like a king. And then all you could think about is some trailer park. And I'm not hating on trailer parks, but just some gutter snipe.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just some awful human being. And he's like hung up on that when he could add Governor Ann Richards. What a class. What a class act.
And then he finds about his family in Louisiana
in
a beer cam named Desire.
I don't mean to interrupt you again, but while I was in Austin, there was some there's a bunch of graffiti obviously everywhere.
Sure.
And I have to, it's on my phone somewhere. I'm going to post it. But it was somebody had spray painted Ann Richards on something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like a spray painted Ann Richards. It was really good too. It was like Banksy quality. You know what I mean? It was like A1. You've been in Austin. They got some really good graffiti art.
I'm gonna say something about Banksy. It's all just like templates. And stuff.
That's it. He does his templates. Because he's got to be fast. Yeah, he's got to be fast. So
anyway, he finds out about his family in Louisiana during a beer cam named Desire. I didn't remember this part, that all of them die except for his cousin, Gilbert. I didn't realize they all died.
Yeah, that was the that was what that whole episode was about. Yeah.
I guess so. But they're all dead.
Yeah, because he goes to go find the heir. He goes to like go find a new, to make the new heirs to the Gilbert De La Fontaine.
I guess that's true, huh?
Yeah, because they was trying to pass him off to the Dixie Chicks.
So we'll see what happens
the Chicks.
We'll see what happens with Bill, but I can't imagine a lot of big stuff has happened to Bill between the end of the show and now.
Yeah.
Khan and Min, they moved to Arlen late in season one. They are frequent antagonists to the Hills because of their horrible attitudes. It is revealed later, which I do not like this episode.
I don't know. I like to think of them as less of antagonists, more like anti-protagonists. Because I don't think they like hate. I don't think they really hate them. It's just like a Keeping Up with the Joneses things. I feel like at the end of the day, if there was like a serious situation, because look, Hank keeps Khan at the house, Khan Jr.,
sure,
and helps her whenever she was going through the change of life and takes her to go get tampons or whatever it is, pads, whatever people use. I don't know nothing about all that. But whatever that is, we didn't have sex ed in school. We had abstinence programs. But that whole thing, you know, so I really don't think that they they truly hate each other. I think it's just a neighbor rivalry where at the end of the day, if your house is on fire, I'm going to help you put it out. If my house is on fire, you help me put it out kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they truly hate each other. I think that's what is so great about their rivalry is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So they all
sure.
Like he knows yeah. Hank's the smartest one in the neighborhood. So out of all of his dumb redneck buddies.
So big deal with them, and like I say, the season 13, Just Another Manic Conde. I'm not crazy about that episode. It feels like an add-on, which we find out later it actually is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He is very egotistical, self-destructive. Min is really hungry to socially climb amongst the people they know.
Yeah, she is. There, she's worried about a social
life. But she does. She does maintain a relationship, like they say here, more with Peggy and Nancy.
And I think their relationship could be considered better. Maybe it's how women and men. It's the age old story about women and men, where men, I'll sit here and tell you you're a piece of shit to your face,
sure.
But women are catty and they'll, oh hey girl, oh that dress is beautiful, but then they'll turn around and be like, that bitch's dress was from the thrift store. You know what I mean? That kind of thing, where guys are just really upfront with each other how they feel about each other, and girls aren't as. So either they're really good friends or they're just really catty.
So she maintains a relationship more so than Khan does with anybody else. But,
but
you know, as it goes, it becomes a little more friendly than terrible the way it started off. And then, of course, Connie, their daughter, the big question.
Genius.
Yeah, the big question is here, will we see them together? And what I didn't realize is they remained friends. Friends, they were good friends at the end, not necessarily romantic acquaintances. And so I don't know what's going to happen there, but I always think of them as being together.
I do too. And I think that when they're together, we actually see how really smart Bobby is. Because Bobby, if Bobby could keep up, the way intelligence works for like my perspective of intelligence is, it's not necessarily how well you can regurgitate information and stuff like that. It's generally more based on like creativity. How creative can you be when solving problems? How creative can you be in finding solutions to problems and stuff like that? And I feel like when Bobby and Connie and how they interact with each other, it shows Bobby is of higher intelligence than is perceived by like a lot of the writing that's done for him. Because Bobby is like this clown figure.
Oh,
but
yeah.
A lot of people don't understand that if you listen to a lot of comedians, like they're, you can't be an idiot and stand on stage and make people laugh. You can't
comedy's
be dumb
tough.
And do comedy. Comedy's hard.
Comedy's very
hard. That's why I kind of got into listening to Shane Gillis is a historian. That was like his college degree is history. So he talks a lot on his podcast about history with like in a comedic way. And, like you could tell, like comedy's hard as it is, but like to be an idiot and do comedy would be twice as hard.
So she, of course, we know all about her intelligence. We know about her violin skills, the pressure she's always under from her parents. Yeah. And the only thing you worry about with Connie is burnout. And so I wonder if she's finally burned out and she's turned completely against all that stuff when the show happens or what happens.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, and then the last one's Luann and Lucky.
Yeah, so that one's tough. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that one. I don't know.
She gets married to Lucky in season 11's Lucky's wedding suit, and then their daughter Gracie is born in season 13, Lucky See, Monkey Do.
Which season 13 is like a throw-together season because they cut it off the air before the season ended.
Sure.
So you get like the last four episodes of King of the Hill were thrown off into syndication. So
they're both dead though, and that's gonna make
that's
it
the
tough
part.
So
again, that's like that goes back to like with Johnny, how do they do that? You know, do they find the voice, like somebody with a spot on voice? There's somebody out there. As much as everybody thinks, oh, there's nobody that could sound just like that, there may be nobody that can embody that character in the same way, but they'll always find somebody who could replicate the voice almost to
the
T.
Yeah.
Mel Blanc died, and he did 100 voices, and they had to find 100 people to replace all the voices that he did. Because now, like, if you look at the list of who all the voices are for the Looney Tunes characters, it's like a huge group of people that do it when it used to be just one dude sitting in there doing them all.
I could always tell the difference.
I can tell the difference.
It's definitely a difference.
I can tell the difference for all of those characters because his voice was, I don't know, it was just... I guess his imprint was left on each character, so you, like the warmth of it all and just his sound was just, you know, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't know. I've got good hopes for it.
Oh, I do too. Right. I do too. I think everything's gonna be fine. Yep. I'm just making me very anxious to watch the show.
Yeah, no, for sure.
All right, you want to tell them where they can find us?
Yeah. So that was Friday's episode of Bois. These boys ain't right. So you can find us at BWAAAKOTH.com, or you could find us at RogueMediaNetwork.com/BWAAAKOTH.
One more time, if you get a chance to go over to Patreon and check us out, there's $3 a month support you could help us out with. Just kind of keep the lights on and help us keep going.
Yep.
Also, remember the Monday episodes are on Spotify as video now, as well as on YouTube. And then you'll see these episodes, like the Friday and any special stuff we do. Yeah. Those will probably just be audio for the time being. We may get to the point where we're shooting everything, but we'll see.
And if you stay tuned to our Instagram, we go live on Instagram for both the Monday and Friday episodes. Yeah. We've just started doing that. I think this is like our third week of consistency
Something like that.
So
yeah.
I'm going to try to keep doing it and keep doing it. And hopefully more and more and more of you will come and tune in and comment. I do read out the comments and shout out, you know, say what's up to people as we're doing it. So if you want to get a little bit more parasocial interaction and have a look into the behind the scenes with me and Mike, come join us on Instagram.com/BWAAKOTH. We usually record on Saturday or Sunday, midday usually.
We just turn on the phone, put it in the bathroom,
and go. So, yeah, come hang out with us. We appreciate it. And that's I think that's a Texas-sized Wimitanye.
That's it. That's it. Right. Wimitanye.
Wimitanye, indeed.
Indeed. To all you all. All
right.
To every one of us or something.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.